How can anyone see the only way the world can be saved and not be forced to weep? These words are spoken by Jesus near the end of Nikos Kazantzakis' novel, The Last Temptation of Christ. In this scene, Jesus is being crucified. Suddenly, he finds himself off the cross and in a fantasy, married and settled in a small town. There, after some years, he is visited by the Apostle Paul, who has been preaching that he, Jesus, is crucified and resurrected. In the argument that follows between them, Paul makes clear that he's going to save the world. Injustice and poverty will be confronted with the message of the crucified and resurrected Jesus. This message has the power and presence to give wings to people's weighty problems, to, and I quote Paul in the novel, to produce great works and great souls and to live one a human's height above the earth. Paul says he creates his truth out of human stubbornness and longing and faith. I do not struggle to find it. I build it taller than people and thus make people grow. If the world is to be saved, it is necessary. This stance of forsaking all, even life, for the salvation of others is probably Kazantzakis' understanding of the Christian message. It appears often throughout the novel. Early in the story, Jesus sighs, if there was only one person who had the strength to starve to death so that people would not die of hunger. In another episode, Jesus identifies with a sacrificial goat and says, my brother, you are innocent and pure like every animal, but people, like cowards, make you bear their sins and killed you. People, poor, weak creatures, have not the courage to pay for their own sins themselves. Jesus found this unsettling. It was unsettling to see how the world can be saved because the consequences for him were considerable. He must forsake his fantasy of a settled life. He must give up his family. He must give up wanting of life itself. And most of all, he must get back to this business of dying on the cross so that his disciples might have their crucified, resurrected figure who is pivotal for their gospel. As Paul is actually recorded to have said in his letter to the Corinthians, if Christ has not been resurrected, then our preaching is in vain. When Jesus says it is not true that I am crucified and resurrected, Paul says, shut your shameless mouth. True or false, what do I care? In the injustices and poverty of this world, the crucified and resurrected Jesus has been the one precious consolation for the honest person, the wrong person. It's enough if the world is saved. Could it be that the message of salvation is quite other than Paul states? When Jesus senses or knows this, he is led to weeping. He weeps because of the very otherness of what he sees. What might Jesus see? He might see that, as he often suggested, love is possible. Love is actually possible. Love is not necessarily simple in itself or in its consequences. It is not even an easy word to use. But love can be. There is a love grounded in strength and self-respect. People yearn for it. Jesus knows this. He sees that it is possible, is at hand, within the grasp. And then it's let go. Love is available. Hands could touch and clasp one another in mutual want, and Jesus sees instead the hands release and often the fists close. Why does this happen? Paul's preaching mentions love. His praise of love in his first letter to the Corinthians is famous and known the world over. And it's beautiful poetry. But Paul's love is founded on assumptions of human weakness. People are seen as a factory of continual misdeed and erroneous loving. They produce volumes of personal guilt for themselves. Ultimately, Paul finds no depth of loving strength within. For Paul, salvation is from without. That is his final word. Jesus also sees people not fulfilling what is possible for them. And here's the important part, the critical part. But he does not judge them, reject them, or make them guilty. The church has something to learn. He does not render people weaker than they are. Instead, he affirms the strength within them so that they might affirm the love that is. An illustration of this comes from John 8. Early in the morning, Jesus came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. And placing her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now in the law, Moses commands us to stone such. What do you say about her?" This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, "Let anyone who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away, one by one, beginning with the eldest. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus looked up to her and said, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and do not sin again." The love that Jesus preaches does not call on us to reject the living strength inside ourselves. Instead, it calls on us to be strong enough to encourage and assist a similar strength in other people. Think about that. The way of this gospel is radical love, a love which loves regardless how unlovable the other person, values regardless of how valuable the other person, trust regardless of how trustworthy the other person, and by doing so creates love, value, and trust between people. It is where trust and respect are strength aspects of loving. It is a place where people, even through their periods of difficult behavior, value and trust each other. Imagine if we truly practice this radical love as a congregation. Even through periods of difficult behavior, we truly value and trust each other, every single one of us. What would be different? What would we learn about ourselves? Love is not simple in itself or in its consequences, but love can be. The way of this gospel is not law. It does not find its application in rules or its grounding in categories of people. The gospel does not suggest that the society is to be without law, but there is a power of love that the gospel addresses to law. This love has transforming and healing power for both individuals and society. Such love is obviously disruptive. Hope is real. Change can come about. People can be free. Weakness of nature is not the final word. The final word lies instead in the strength of our loving, in the strength of our loving. It's where our possibilities are born, for love is disruptive and can lead to change. If this were not true, then love would not be the enormous power we want it to be and know it to be. Now, the gospel of Jesus does center on love. This love says yes to the possibilities of life. The expression of such love must be in community. It does request a reality. What we are, and not just what we say. There's a remaining concern that I have. It is not about institutional failure, nor is it a worry over individual lack. We are human. The empowering love we are addressing is clearly love in spite of the conditions of existence. Such love is not perfectionist in its goal or its desire. Yet, could Paul be right? Ultimately, at some place within ourselves, is the human soul more comfortable saying no to itself? Are we too uncomfortable to go very far with saying yes to the possibilities of life? The danger of our inability to say yes to ourselves is the resulting need to say no to others and to make others say no to themselves. Therein is a complicated tale of violence. This from Douglas Adams' novel, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. For those of you that know this novel, this is the opening. Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the Western Spiral Arm of the Galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 98 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose eight descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea. This novel's a little old. This planet has, or rather had, a problem, which was this. Most of the people living on it were unhappy for pretty much the time. Many solutions were suggested for this problem, but most of these were largely concerned with the movements of small green pieces of paper. Aren't we still like that? We push paper around to solve problems when we're the problem. Concerned with the movements of small green pieces of paper, which is odd because on the whole, it wasn't the small green pieces of paper that were unhappy. And so the problem remained. Lots of people were mean. Most of them were miserable, even the ones with digital watches. Many were increasingly of the opinion that they made a big mistake in coming down from the trees in the first place. And some said that even the trees had been a bad move and that no one should have ever left the oceans. And then one Thursday, nearly 2,000 years ago, one man was nailed to a tree for saying how great it would be to be nice to people for a change. Is this the gospel of radical love, that no one needs to be nailed to anything ever again? There are people getting nailed to all kinds of things all over this planet. Do we finally get it? We're all brothers and sisters on this planet. We can either compete against each other or help each other. Which shall it be? Can anyone really help another? Does understanding Jesus' weeping matter for us? Isn't it appropriate that we seek to understand how to improve the odds for enabling strength, hope, and love in our lives? Isn't that a worthwhile pursuit? I leave you with these words from my colleague, Alan Jones. In the end, ministry is deceptively simple. We tend not to trust the simplicity at the heart of religion, that we were made by love and for love. Happy Easter, everyone.
Happy Easter.
Our benediction. If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word or song, if I can show somebody they're traveling wrong, then my living will not be in vain. Martin Luther King, Jr.